Good morning, Washington. Good morning, Virginia. Good morning, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. This is Mark Levine, and this is the AM Alternative. Wait, don't touch that snooze button. No. Leave the radio on. You got to get up. You got to go to work. I know it's cold outside. I was just there. Trust me, it's cold outside. It's a lot better this morning than it's going to be this evening. You know there's a winter storm warning on the way. 4 to 8 inches of snow predicted tonight. Not today, tonight. So you got to get up and go to work tonight. But you know what? I've been willing to bet you might just get off work tomorrow. So go ahead, get up today, suffer the cold, and who knows, you might just have a four-day weekend. I'm not so sure about Friday, but I do know, again, 4 to 8 inches tonight. It's expected to start between 8 and 10 p.m. It's not quite the snowpocalypse that we remember a few years back, but it's going to be pretty heavy. And, of course, the reason for all of this weather is that the polar vortex is going to attack us again, it looks like. I don't know if it'll get as cold as it was before, but many of you know that because of global warming, the warmth in the Arctic area, in the Arctic Circle, way up there in the North Pole, has basically pushed the winds that curve around at the top of the North Pole, pushed them down to attack us. Just one more example of the things that can go wrong when corporations play with your air. This is Mark Levine. This is the AM Alternative. We've got a terrific show for you today. Today we're going to talk about the Republican cave-in. Did you hear about this? Did you know? The great surrender by the Tea Party. It happened yesterday. Yesterday, the Tea Party Republicans, well, the entire Republican Party, could be seen going around Washington with their tail between their legs because they couldn't stop the nation's economy. They backed down. Like most bullies, when confronted, they backed down. Now, I have long argued that when you go up against bullies, the best way to do that is to fight back. And the Democrats, unfortunately, have this habit of not fighting back. Still hearing some music. Oh, all right. Let's. Okay. That's fine. It's just very peaceful bed as I'm attacking the Republicans. That's fine. Well, I'm not used to the bed. What can I say? Get out of bed, right? Here's what happened yesterday. The Republicans have long used the debt ceiling as a way of taking hostages, as a way of attacking the Democrats, as a way of attacking the country. Now, the debt ceiling, of course, is the really artificial line in the sand that Congress has drawn that began in wartime, began, I believe, in World War I, actually, when Congress sort of wanted to set a limit on their spending. But it's completely artificial. And it's artificial for the simple reason that Congress can lift it. Congress can put it on. Congress, of course, can pass laws that have debt and spending and so forth as Congress wishes. So what's the point of a debt ceiling? Well, the main point is so that Congress can take itself and the country hostage. Because if the United States were to ever stop paying its debt, then we'd have a massive recession because no one would trust the United States to have full faith and credit, I guess is the word you'd use, for its debt, for its bonds to pay back. Now, we get lending from, well, every country on earth, a huge amount from China. Trillions of dollars come rolling into the United States because we are the safest country on earth for countries to put their money, for people to put their money. And the reason is because the United States has never once defaulted on the national debt. For all of American history, I mean, you can go back to the American Revolution, and you find one of the first things they decided to do was to pay back their debt. And they did so because they knew that if they didn't, no one would lend to the United States again. During the Civil War, the Union actually ran out of gold and silver. They started printing paper money. But at the end of the war, it was very clear that the Union would pay back its debts, and they made it very clear that the Confederates would not pay back theirs. The rebels would not get paid. Their money is worthless. Today, you can still buy Confederate money very cheaply. You can probably get a Confederate $20 bill for a buck or maybe $5 or $10 because of historic value. But it's clearly not worth the paper it's printed on. And after the Civil War, the United States passed the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, probably the greatest single amendment to the Constitution. It's the one that protects everyone, gives everyone the equal protection under the laws. It's the 14th Amendment that declares that everyone born in the United States is a citizen of the United States. It's also the 14th Amendment that was used to overturn segregation laws. Brown versus Board of Education was based on the 14th Amendment, based on equal protection under the laws. There's another little hidden gem in the 14th Amendment that you may not know about. It happens to be Section 4. It's not the section that's often quoted, but, you know, I'm the kind of guy that carries my Constitution around with me and flips through it and reads things. And Section 4 of the 14th Amendment says that the validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, you know what they're talking about there, fighting the Civil War, fighting the rebels, shall not be questioned. But no one shall pay any debt in aid of insurgents or rebellion. There should be no claim for the loss or emancipation of any slave. All debts, obligations, and claims will be illegal and void. So here's what the 14th Amendment says, Section 4. Basically, it says, Union's going to pay its debts. The Confederacy's not going to pay its debts. We're not paying back slave owners for their loss of slaves. But most importantly, and this is the part that still applies today, the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law shall not be questioned. Now, I have long argued that a debt ceiling is unconstitutional, based on this 14th Amendment. A debt ceiling is when Congress says, we don't authorize ourselves to spend any more money. And then what does Congress do after saying, we don't authorize ourselves to spend any money? They go and they vote for laws that spend more money. So the debt ceiling, which again, I think is unconstitutional based on the 14th Amendment, is also superseded by subsequent legislation where Congress spends more money. Now, this may all sound very technical, very legal, highfalutin stuff, but the reason why it matters is that when Congress threatens not to raise the national debt ceiling, they're basically threatening to shut our national economy down. When the Republicans say, you know what, maybe we should stop spending on the national debt, on Social Security, on federal workers, on military veterans, on national parks, on everything the government spends on, and goes further than shutting down the government, but actually argues that they shouldn't pay the debts, that means that suddenly U.S. bonds are no good. Suddenly the full faith and credit of the United States is no more. Now, if that were to actually happen, interest rates would skyrocket, countries would take their money out of the United States, and we would spiral down into probably at least as bad a depression as the Great Depression, possibly even worse. Because as I pointed out, in the worst times of the United States, in the worst times of the Civil War and the Revolutionary War and World War I, World War II, we always paid back our debts. And that's why, by the way, it is cheaper for the United States to borrow than any other country on earth, because people trust their money with us. A little crazy, I know, given how dysfunctional Congress has been lately, and even some ratings agencies have said that we're no longer the very, very top rating, where the second highest rating because of the dysfunction caused by Congress. But still, at the end of the day, we've never defaulted on our national debt in 225 years or so. So we are to be trusted. Well, the Republicans, and in the past, some Democrats, have used this debt ceiling to threaten to get what they want. It's kind of like threatening someone with a nuclear weapon. It's knowing that if you push the button, everybody gets blown up. The whole world collapses. The U.S. economy collapses. It would be a major, major depression. It's kind of the kind of threat that you can't really use, right? I mean, if I threaten you that I'm going to touch the nuclear button and destroy everything you and I know, you know that unless I'm insane, unless I am literally mentally ill, you know that I'm not going to do it. It's a bluff. If I destroy the nation and its economy and the world's economy, yeah, I may harm you. I will harm you. But I'll harm me too. And so it has been an empty threat for generations. Now, it's true that in the past, they've tied a few things to raising the debt ceiling. But usually they're things that Congress comes and agrees to anyway. But this new tactic that the Republicans have, or have had over the past few years, of threatening to not raise the debt ceiling has, in the past, caused Democrats to cave. And what happened yesterday, and the miracle of yesterday, was that the Democrats stood firm and did not cave. That wasn't always the case. I remember back to, 2010, back to President Obama's first term. And in that first term, President Obama, the Democrats, right before the election, didn't raise the debt ceiling. I guess they thought it would look bad to them politically. So they waited on it. And then the Tea Party Republicans came in. They were flush with power. And they insisted that Barack Obama raise taxes on 95% of Americans unless they gave the super rich a massive tax cut. So that was the plan, right? The Bush tax cuts were expiring. This is what's going on at the end of 2010. And the taxes would go up for everyone. And so Obama said, look, I'm willing to keep taxes low for the 95-98% of Americans, 99% of Americans that make under $250,000 a year. But I think it's fair to ask the very wealthy Americans, those that have gained so much in the last decade, or two, really, three decades since Ronald Reagan, I think it's fair to ask them to pay the same taxes they did under Bill Clinton. And the Republicans said, no way. We would rather everyone's taxes go up throughout the United States. We would rather punish all Americans. We would rather everyone suffer unless super rich people get a super sweet deal. Because Republicans basically said, we don't give a damn about 98% of Americans, the people who pay our bills, the people who get us elected, are that sliver, that 1% of America that controls one-third of the nation's wealth. And because they're the ones who pay our salaries, well, our campaign salaries, they're the ones who get us elected, we don't need to care about the rest of the American people. And if you don't make sure that super rich people get a super sweet deal, then we are not only going to raise taxes on everybody, but we're going to shut down the government and default on the debt ceiling, and the whole economy will come down to collapse. In other words, they threatened Obama with the equivalent, economically, of pushing the nuclear button. But when you think about nuclear war, and you think about why it hasn't happened in the modern age since more than one country had nuclear weapons, you think about, well, it's because of mutually assured destruction, right? No one nukes us if we can nuke them, if they're sane. Now, if they're not sane, that's a different issue. But there's no sane reason why anyone would push the nuclear button in wartime, and there's no sane reason why anyone would nuke the American economy either. So I argued at that time very loudly, as I am wont to do. I remember going on Fox News and arguing with Bill O'Reilly that President Obama needed to stand firm, that he had to hold his ground, that he had to say, all right, Republicans, I call your bluff. You wouldn't dare nuke the nation's economy. So go ahead, make my day. Just raise the debt ceiling. We'll negotiate about all these tax and spend clauses, but don't tie it to the debt ceiling. The Republicans said no. And back in 2010, Obama compromised, and I complained about it, as did many others on the left, many other progressives. And at the time, he raised taxes only on those making $400,000 or more. And even more egregiously, he cut back on the estate tax. He basically said that if you have $10 million as a married couple, you can pass it on to your child tax-free. So he gave some sweetheart deals to some rich people, maybe not as much as the Republicans wanted, definitely not as much as the Republicans wanted. But here's the thing. He did it because of the threat of the debt ceiling. And what I'm telling you is that yesterday, The Republicans allowed the debt ceiling to go up, and they got nothing for it. They made a bluff. The Democrats stood firm, and nothing happened. They just caved. So the question that I want to address over the next hour or two is, how did that happen? How did we get to the point of Democrats basically compromising, basically giving in, to the point where they're standing firm and not giving in at all? Before I address that question, though, it is Pledge Week at WPFW, which means that it's our time to ask you to support the station. The number to call in to pledge is 202-588-9739, 202-588-WPFW, or you can call toll-free 1-800-222-9739. WPFW 89.3 FM, of course, is your jazz and justice station. It's one of the few stations in America, the Pacifica network, is one of the few networks in America that is not corporate-owned, that is not at all funded by commercials. That's right. The other radio stations you hear, they are funded by McDonald's and Walmart and all manner of corporations that maybe don't treat their workers very well. But they can buy ads, and because they buy ads, the radio station comes on the air. And you may wonder why it is that you hear a lot of conservative talk radio, but very little progressive talk radio. And the answer is because progressives like me, we tell the truth about corporations, and they don't want to fund us. And I kind of understand it, right? When we talk about how Walmart or McDonald's or many other corporations mistreat their workers, they don't run ads on our shows. So the only way that people like me get to talk to people like you is because of stations like WPFW, 89.3 FM. But it also means that I've got to ask you to help me fund the station. I've got to ask you to support the station because you are the reason why we are on the air. It is only through the generosity of listeners like you who support the idea of having an AM alternative, support the idea of having alternative progressive radio, that we can talk about the things we talk about, that I can tell you why the Republicans are caving on the debt ceiling. So if you will call 202-588-9739 and make a pledge of just $35, you become a member of WPFW. And what that lets you do is actually vote on local station boards, choose the content, make sure we remain there with Jazz and Justice. But, and here's the good part, if you give more, if you give $120, then there's something very, very special waiting for you. If you give $120, then as a premium, as a bonus gift, WPFW will give you 100 of the greatest speeches you've ever heard. 100 speeches. From everyone from Malcolm X to Paul Krugman to Robert Scheer to Richard Wolff, who we heard from last week, to just the list just goes on and on and on and on. Cornel West. What this is, and I couldn't possibly, I tried to listen to some of it last night. I couldn't possibly listen to it all. And the reason is, because I totaled up the hours, there's 160 hours of progressive, thought-provoking speeches by some of the nation's best thinkers, best economists, and it's all there for you if you pledge $120. Now, 160 hours, some are three-hour speeches, some are 20-minute speeches, and everything in between. But what these speeches do is they provide you the foundation for progressive values. And when you think about what 160 hours is, this is enough for you to listen. Well, you could listen 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you still wouldn't finish. But you could listen a half hour a day almost the entire year and have a half hour of good progressive thought every single day this year for only a pledge of $120. You're actually getting, when you think about it, 160 hours for $120, you're paying less than a dollar an hour for, it's $100. Excuse me, it's $100, not $120. You're welcome to give $120. We'd love to have $120. Frankly, if you can give $500, WPFW can use all the help it can to keep Jazz and Justice on the air. But I'm told it's just been lowered. Special deal if you're calling now. $100, 202 588-9739, $100 for 100 speeches. $100, 100 speeches, 160 hours of progressive content. If you will pledge to WPFW right now on the AM Alternative, 202-588-9739, 202-588-9739, or 1-800-222-9739. And what these thinkers do is they talk about how progressives can stand firm and win the argument. And that's exactly what they did on the debt ceiling yesterday. And I know it sounds like all this Washington waste of talk. There's a reason why Congress has an approval rating somewhere in the single digits, 6%, 9%. People do not respect Congress very much because of all the fighting, because of all the Republican obstruction. But something happened yesterday, and it's remarkable, and it's worth mentioning. Because as frankly, most of us at WPFW, if you listened to the Raucous Caucus back 3 years ago, you heard Garland Nixon, Terry Kester, and I, we staged an Obama intervention. Do you remember that? We actually had our little intervention. We invited the president in. He didn't actually come in the studio, but I'm sure he was listening at the White House. And we reminded him, like you do in any good intervention, that we love him, we care about him, but we were very worried about his behavior. He was doing things that were destructive for himself and the people around him. And the destructive things that President Obama was doing was caving in to Republicans, was not fighting back, was letting bullies pick on him and the country. And one of the things my dad taught me back when I was 10 years old is that you got to stand up to bullies. That usually bullies are afraid, and usually they'll back down if you stand together and fight against them. And, well, President Obama, the next go-around, the last government shutdown, stood firm, said he's not caving in, said Americans don't want the government to shut down, and they're going to blame you for it. In other words, President Obama took a page from Bill Clinton's playbook. You'll remember back in 95, 96, when the Republicans first came roaring in, when Newt Gingrich came to power, they shut the government down too. Now, they didn't threaten to default the national debt. That's even more severe. But they shut the government down, and it lasted for months. And Bill Clinton said, the American people don't want the government shut down. The American people need their Social Security and Medicare checks. The American people like to go to the national parks. They actually appreciate the services of federal workers. You know, maybe Americans don't always appreciate federal workers until suddenly their Medicare check doesn't come in, or they can't visit a national park, or their roads are, the interstate highways aren't paved. And then suddenly Americans understand how much good the quiet, hardworking federal workforce does. So Bill Clinton stood firm in 95, 96, and the Republicans backed down then. And the experience was so severe, so searing, that the Republicans didn't try to shut the government down again for a good, 15 years. And in fact, Newt Gingrich would never do it again. He left office, and then a whole bunch of new Republicans came in, a whole bunch of Tea Party people. And they came in and they forgot the lessons of 15 years earlier, and they threatened the Democrats again. And as I said, President Obama at first caved, completely caved. Well, not completely, but he definitely caved. He definitely allowed the Republicans to tie the debt ceiling and government, well, the government continued to stay open, to the things that they wanted. But you know what? I think he learned his lesson. Sometimes a president comes in, is kind of new at the job, doesn't know how hard he has to fight back, or she, when we get a female president, how hard she has to fight back. And so I think President Obama learned his lesson. And in the most recent government shutdown, he stood firm like Bill Clinton, and the Republicans caved. And now on the debt ceiling, what happened yesterday was the Republicans again tried this very weak fight. They tried to basically tie the increase in the debt ceiling to military pensions. Now, a lot of Americans support military pensions. We should. Our veterans have fought very hard. Many of them have risked their lives in Iraq, Afghanistan, come home wounded, come home disabled. If there's anyone that deserves a pension, it's them. And while you can make some arguments about extremely rich people in the military who retire in their 40s and had a desk job and and don't need the money because they're making millions in their second jobs, that's a different story. But for the vast majority of the military, they need their pensions just like the rest of us need our pensions. So it's something that, you know, I was surprised when Democrats and Republicans cut military pensions for those that retired early before they were 65. And they did that just a few months ago. So Republicans wanted to restore the military pensions, which would be fine, except that they tied it to the debt ceiling. And they wanted just to go on principle, I guess. They wanted to show that principally they could hold America hostage. They could threaten to destroy the economy and get what they want. And even though what they wanted was relatively uncontroversial, it would set a precedent by saying, aha, the Republicans can hold the country hostage whenever they want. And President Obama, to his credit, said no. The Democrats, to their credit, said no. They stood firm and they said, you know what? We don't care what you attach to it. You shouldn't be able to extort a price on our heads for simply keeping the economy going. You shouldn't be able to threaten to destroy the nation's economy and then use that to get something. So they stood firm, and the Democrats won their battle just yesterday because the Republicans couldn't get their act together. They couldn't agree on anything amongst themselves. And so they had to rely on Democratic votes. And by about 220 to 201 yesterday, the Democrats overwhelmingly voted to raise the debt ceiling. They got a few Republicans, maybe a tenth of the Republicans on board, and they passed the law, and the country keeps on functioning. So congratulations to the Democrats. Congratulations to President Obama. And I'd love to hear what you think about this. If you want to call in and talk to me and let me know, it's 202-588-0893. You can call in and let me know. But before you do that, I need you to pledge, because it is your pledge that keeps this station going. And if you call in at 202-588-9739, 202-588-WPFW, or toll-free 1-800-222-9739, 1-800-222-WPFW, and you pledge $100, you get 100 speeches, a dollar per speech, from some of the greatest thinkers of our time, from people like Cornel West, from people like Edward Said, from people like Robert Scheer or Paul Krugman or just the great economists of our day, the great progressive thinkers of all time. And it's really good because it's 160 hours of speeches. Like I said, I tried to listen to some of it last night, but there's so much there. This is the kind of gift that you can use again and again and again and keep coming back to. If you want to hear from all the hours of some really powerful speeches, kind of like the ones that I played last week from Richard Wolff, about why it is that we have the progressive thought that we do and how we can fight back. I think the Democrats showed a way to fight back yesterday, and I think these speeches can give you a way to fight back. And, of course, WPFW is your way to fight back, because WPFW is one of the few stations in the country that does not rely on corporations, that does not rely on big business and the people that are basically mistreating American workers to get by. So, why don't we do that? Why don't we do that? Let's play. We're going to play some of those. Just talking to my board op. Nick's doing a very good job behind the scenes. Again, for just $100, you get 100 speeches, 160 hours of great progressive thought. The number is 202-588-9739, 202-588-WPFW, and you can call in and order that for a $100 donation to keep WPFW on the air. Now, to be fair, you can give whatever amount you want. Any pledge is welcome. I don't think $100 is too much to ask. When you think about it, it's, what, 30 cents a day for a year for 100 speeches, 160 hours. But any donation that you can give, we are glad to have your support. We need your support. It's only your support that keeps WPFW on the air, that keeps 89.3 FM alive, that gives you that wonderful jazz that you hear here, but also justice, because we have to seek justice wherever we can. And, well, like I said, we have to fight back against those that would destroy the country with things like causing us to go bankrupt. So, again, if you want to call in, it is 202-588-0839. If you want to call in and talk with me, I'd be glad to hear from you.
0893.
Oh, excuse me, 0893, of course, 89.3 FM. What did I say? I said something else. All right, 202-588-0893 to call in, 202-588-9739 to pledge. This is Mark Levine. This is the AM Alternative. There is a winter storm coming tonight. If you haven't heard, it's going to come between 8 and 10 p.m. tonight, 4 to 8 inches of snow. So you're going to have to go to work today, but tomorrow, my guess is you might get liberal leave. You might get snowed in. It might actually be dangerous to be out on the roads tonight and tomorrow. But for now, the roads are clear. It is cold outside. You gotta get up. You got to go to work. One of the things that Republicans are saying with regard to all the bad weather is they say, aha, we have some snow. We have some cold weather. That means that global warming is a farce. That means that climate change isn't happening. And, of course, if someone says something to you, you can remind them what an idiotic thing that is. Not just because all the scientists and environmental scientists and you know, 99% of them, the ones that aren't being paid off by industry, talk about the real increase in temperatures in global warming, but also because it's the very nature of global warming that's causing our weather patterns to be so screwy. It's actually what you'll find is while it gets very cold down here, and it's not going to be near as cold as it was a few weeks ago when the polar vortex came down and really, really got us good. But during that polar vortex, it was actually, and this is something amazing to me, it was warmer on the Arctic Circle in Point Barrow, Alaska, right up there, the very tip of Alaska, on the Arctic Circle, it was something like 38 degrees. It was warmer there than it was in the Gulf of Mexico. So that's got to be, I don't know, there's another time in world history, in recorded history that we know of, maybe back when the dinosaurs roamed the land, where Alaska was warmer than Mississippi or Louisiana down on the Gulf Coast. And that tells you that our weather patterns are a mess. And all you have to do is look at the footage of the Arctic Circle, look at the ice cap melting, and it gets really scary because the ice cap is receding faster than at any time before in recorded history. You find that every year, twice the size of Great Britain in ice falls into the ocean, and it's receding very, very fast. And the reason it's doing that, of course, is because of carbon emissions, because the United States and nations around the world are burning fossil fuels, putting carbon dioxide in the air, and that's causing this massive warming effect that we have never seen before in human history. And it gets really scary. You know, I live close to the Potomac River. The Potomac River is gonna rise as the ice caps melt, as all rivers will, and eventually will inundate coastal property. And it's increasing more and more. Hurricanes are increasing more and more, and we don't have a lot of time left. So what is the answer? How do we stop global warming? Is there a way out, or do we just basically hunker down, move away from the waterfront, move inland, and let the tidal waves come, let the typhoons come? Well, I don't know if any of you have read Lester Brown's book. It's called Plan B 4.0. But this is the best book I've seen as a way to confront the dangers of global warming. And he advocates some pretty strong prescriptive behavior, but I don't think it's impossible. He actually lays it out very clearly how it can be done. And one of the things he talks about is ending the nation's reliance on coal. Coal, by far, there's two main causes of global warming, of pollution, of this particulate matter in the air that we all have to breathe. And the two main causes are coal and gasoline-powered cars. But coal is actually the most dangerous. It is the most dangerous thing facing America. It's still where we get about half of our electricity, but it's going down. And in fact, every year we get far more new wind plants and solar and geothermal than we do coal. And that's a good thing because coal is very dirty. I live in Alexandria, and just a few blocks from my home was the Morant power plant. And I remember this huge mountain of coal. And the dust got in the air. You could smell it. You could breathe it. You would see the particulate matter on the ground. And if you want to know the worst possible place, just take a look at China. You ever seen pictures of Chinese cities? Well, they're hard to see the cities. The air is so thick with pollution. I mean, Los Angeles smog is nothing compared to what you see in China. And all of that is from burning coal. All of that is from fossil fuels like gasoline. All of that is from the same thing that's causing our Arctic ice to melt and our oceans to rise and our weather patterns to get so ugly. And we got to get rid of coal. We have to get rid of fossil fuels. And the best way to do it, well, is to tax it to make sure that people are incentivized to use clean energy rather than dirty energy. But I know the argument against it. Raise taxes, that's bad. We should never raise taxes. Raising taxes makes everybody poorer and so forth, right? We hear that. So the answer to me is very simple. In fact, Lester Brown advocates rebating it in income taxes. I would just rebate it per person. Because we all have to pay for gasoline in our cars and so forth. Just take the money raised in taxes, use some of it to promote clean energy, and the rest, just give it back. Just give it back to the American people. Give us a check. This is your carbon tax rebate check so that Americans understand that even if they're paying extra at the pump, they're getting back money because of that. And if you use public transit, if you use metro, if you take buses, if you aren't polluting the air with a car, if you're buying an electric car, then you don't have to pay the carbon tax. You get the carbon rebate, and suddenly the incentives are in the right direction. We can get rid of coal. We are slowly getting rid of coal. And for those that think this is impossible, I say, you know, the government has always helped America throughout history move from one transportation system to another. In the 1840s, the government built canals. Remember the story of the Erie Canal? The main way of transportation in the United States in the early 1800s was rivers, right? Boats going up and down. We had the steam engine, the steamboat. And to get from place to place, to get from the East Coast to the West Coast, that's what the Erie Canal is all about, right? Not to the West Coast, but to cross over the Appalachians. They had to have canals, and the government worked very hard on canals. Then the next big mode of transport was railroads. That was the way to get across the country. Railroads were even better than canals. You could place them anywhere. You didn't have to rely on rivers. And the government used its power of eminent domain, taking land and so forth, to build railroads all across the nation to allow for the next mode of infrastructure to happen. And the government paid huge amounts of money, and the railroads came, and the nation's economy built up among the railroads. Well, what was next? Next was, yes, the internal combustion engine, the car, the thing that's causing all the pollution now. But that was better than railroads. I mean, even a railroad had to go only in a certain line. You had to lay track down. A car could go wherever you wanted it to go, and a lot faster than a horse. And let's face it, horses had their own problems. There's a lot of manure in the streets of 19th century America. So we had cars. We had the interstate highway system. We had Eisenhower, who would probably be considered a liberal by Republicans today, but lay out, spend a ton of money on infrastructure on the interstate highway system, so that Americans could move from place to place. So it's happened three times in the past that the government has spent a lot of money by raising taxes or using tax money so that the next phase of the American economy could grow. And now President Obama wants to do the exact same thing with green energy. He wants to promote energy-efficient cars, promote conservation. You know that those the light bulbs you use, all Republicans, we want to use incandescent light bulbs, which are 90% heat and 10% light. It's kind of like the Republican Party, more heat than light, right? They want to use this very old-fashioned technology, which actually burns out much more quickly than the fluorescent bulbs. And actually, there's going to be a new kind of bulb, the LED bulb, that's even more energy efficient than the fluorescent bulbs. So if you don't like those, we're going to get even better. But bulbs that emit more light than heat. And isn't that what we want? In fact, by energy efficiency alone, even without getting rid of coal plants, we can basically deal with all of the increase in energy needs around the world. It just takes giving people the right incentives. And there's nothing wrong with taxing carbon, because when you tax carbon, you're basically making the companies pay for the extra cost of what they do, right? If you have to breathe in particulate matter, you have to breathe in dirty air, then you might get lung cancer, even if you don't smoke. And if you get lung cancer, there's an extra cost, and that's a cost that you have to pay. I mean, you might even die from it, but it's a cost that you have to pay that the company that caused your damage isn't paying for. So all a carbon tax does is it makes the people who caused the damage pay for it. Now, corporations don't want you to talk about carbon taxes, particularly oil companies. They don't want you to talk about that at all. That's why the Koch brothers, who are both oil barons, each of which has about $36 billion apiece, they spend more on elections than all unions put together. And what they do, the Koch brothers, is they also fund radio stations. They fund right-wing radio. There's a reason why, even in Washington, D.C., even in San Francisco, even in some of the most liberal, progressive cities in the country, cities that are 90% Democratic or at least 70%, very, very liberal blue cities, you still find more conservatives on talk radio than progressives. You ever wondered why that is? Why it is that there's so little progressive radio in this country, and I know this as a progressive talk show host for the last 10 years, it's very hard to get a word edgewise. It's not because people don't agree with us. It's not because people don't support stopping global warming, don't support fighting back on a government, on being taken hostage by Republicans and the debt ceiling. It's because we don't have corporation-supported radio. Progressive radio is entirely due to people like you. It's only because of your generosity that I can say the things I can, the other great hosts on WPFW on 89.3 FM can say the things they do on the air. And so we do have to rely on your money. You're our only hope. But you're essential. And to be fair, you've come through. For the last 50 years, Pacifica Radio has been on the air because of people like you picking up the phone and dialing 202-588-9739. 202-588-WPFW. You call in, you make your pledge, and your support makes WPFW on the air. And if you pledge today $100, you get 100 of the greatest speeches ever. You get it. What's wonderful about this collection is it's thought-provoking stuff. It's not just rhetoric, not even mostly rhetoric of getting, exhorting us to do the right thing, ask not what your country can do for you, what you can do for your country. That rhetoric is good. It's inspiring. But this collection is very thoughtful. It allows you to listen to some of the great thinkers in America, around the world, talking about issues like global warming, talking about issues like globalization and moving American jobs abroad and why unions are so much in danger from the Republican right. The collection features Cornel West. It features Robert Scheer. It features a whole host of thinkers, economists. And what I like is they explain in very clear terms exactly why we are where we are and what we can do about it. And that's the crucial part, what we can do about it. So it's 160 hours of speeches. 160 hours. You know, you could buy a song on iTunes for 99 cents and that'll last 3 minutes. But for $100, you can get 160 hours. Talk about a bargain. 160 hours of great provoking thought just by and the thing is, not only are you getting this wonderful premium, these 100 greatest speeches, but you support WPFW, which, let's face it, is the real reason why you're donating in the first place. The main reason why you're calling 202-588-9739, 202-588-WPFW, calling in and supporting Jazz and Justice. Because when you call in and you make your pledge, you are allowing progressive thought on the air. You're allowing people like me to talk to people like you and allowing you to call in. And by the way, if you want to call in and comment on anything I've said, from the Republicans caving in on the debt ceiling to global warming, just pick up the phone and dial 202-588-0893, 588-0893 for 89.3 FM, and that's to call in and talk to me. But do that and also pledge, because when you call 202-588-WPFW, 202-588-9739, when you do that, you are supporting progressive radio. You're fighting back against the Koch brothers. You're fighting back against the idea that $1 controls one vote in America. See, here's the thing. What conservatives use that money for, the reason why conservatives and the people in the Republicans don't care about raising taxes on 95% of Americans and just want to protect their 1% is because they know that with the money from the 1%, the money from the corporations, the money from the people who are polluting our water and our air, that they can use that money to get out their message and then persuade half the American populace or so. They didn't quite get half in the last election. They got less than half, but used district boundaries to control the House. But they can use that money to persuade people to support them. See, it's all about control of the airways. It's all about who gets out there and gets their message across. And it's not surprising that the wealthy people have the most money. They're the ones that can pay for the most time to get their message across. And again, that's another reason to support WPFW, to support alternative radio, to support the AM alternative, to support me, Mark Levine, to support WPFW, 89.3 FM, and all it does to bring alternative radio to you. So please pick up the phone, dial 202-588-9739, 202-588-9739, make your pledge. Any amount is welcome. $35 makes you a member, $100 gets you 160 hours of some of the greatest speeches ever in America. Speeches that are not just inspiring, which they are, but thought-provoking. Speeches that actually teach you something and make you think, and you can play again and again. As I said, 160 hours. You could play an hour a day for half the year and then play them again an hour a day. Just remind yourself of all you've learned and play them for your friends as well. So again, that's a $100 donation, 202-588-9739. Let me get back to global warming, because I don't know that Americans necessarily see all the pernicious effects of coal. And there's a coal lobby, let's face it, particularly those of you listening to me from West Virginia, you know about the coal lobby. The coal lobby basically controls West Virginia. It also controls, let's face it, portions of Appalachian Virginia and Kentucky, because coal companies are pretty much the only industry going there. And one of the things they do in Appalachia is currently they're not even paying very many workers to work in the coal mines like they used to, which is a dirty, dangerous job. Now they found it's cheaper, rather than pay those hardworking men and women to risk the damage to their lungs, to risk their lives, to go down deep into mine shafts to get coal. They found it's a lot cheaper just to bomb the mountains. Did you know they're doing this? Did you know that coal companies are using more explosives on our mountaintops in Appalachia than we used on Hiroshima in the atomic bomb? What they do is they blow up the mountain and rains down all the pieces of the mountain, including coal. It exposes the seam of coal, which they collect, but also rains down into our rivers poisons. Poisons like arsenic, heavy metals like cadmium and selenium that enter our waters, kill the life there, and then float down right here to Washington, D.C., right down to the Potomac River, which is one of the reasons why we don't dare drink the water in the Potomac, nor even swim in it. I often go down in Alexandria, I see people fishing, and I say, you know, why are you fishing? And they said, oh, just for sport, we want to catch fish. And I say, do you eat the fish? They say, oh, no. No, we don't dare eat the fish. There are too many poisons in the Potomac River to eat the fish. But that's a cost of doing business. That's a cost of mountaintop bombing. Here you have some of the oldest mountains on the planet. Planet Earth is some 4 billion years old. And the Appalachian Mountains have been around pretty much since the formation of the Earth. Not like those new upstarts, the Rockies in the West. You ever wondered why the Rocky Mountains are so jagged and the Appalachian Mountains are so rolling and smooth? Well, they've been around a lot longer. They've been around twice, maybe three times as long. They've been around practically since the beginning of the Earth. So new mountains, you know, only a billion years old, new mountains are jagged. But after 4 billion years of rain and erosion and life in these mountains, they have, well, they've been eroded. They curve. They don't have those sharp peaks anymore. There's a beauty to the Rockies, and there's another beauty to the Appalachians. And when you think about the life that's been there for 4 billion years, the animals and the trees and the rolling mountains, and you think that this has been around since way, way before humanity joined the planet. And then it all gets bombed. It's blown up. Just the entire beautiful ancient mountain becomes a moonscape, a black, hard rock of nothingness. Just some flat rock of dirt and rubble. No trees, no animals. All of what was in that mountain rained down in the rivers, coming down to pollute our river, the Potomac River. And for what? For a little bit more coal? I mean, I hate the coal industry, but at the very least, before they started bombing our mountains, when the miners went down in, that dirty job they got paid to do, at least they weren't blowing up our mountains. They weren't destroying 4 billion years of the environment. They weren't creating a moonscape. Now, it's even worse. It's even worse. Coal doesn't just pollute the air, doesn't just cause global warming, but they're polluting our rivers. They're blowing up mountains. They're destroying 4 billion years of the environment. And I'm sure you know, just 2 weeks ago, a coal plant, maybe it was 3 weeks ago, coal plant that was on the last clean river in West Virginia, virtually the last, Elk River, the river that services the capital, Charleston, the major population center of West Virginia, hundreds of thousands of people. There was a storage unit for a chemical used to treat coal that had not been checked in more than 20 years because West Virginia's legislature is bought off by the coal industry, and so they don't have regulation. And, of course, Republicans in Congress don't support federal regulation, so nobody checked to see if this chemical was leaking into the water. Nobody checked to see if the seals around this massive storage tank, I forget how many thousands of gallons of this chemical were in the storage tank, to see if the seals were protecting the chemicals, keeping them inside, keeping them from leaching into the water. Well, they weren't, and the chemicals leached in, and suddenly the entire capital city of Charleston, West Virginia, hundreds of thousands of people couldn't drink the water, couldn't bathe, couldn't brush their teeth. They'd simply had to leave West Virginia, or they had to make sure that they had bottled water. One-third of the state basically became refugees in their own homes, all because of the pollution, all because of these coal companies, all because they weren't paying for their cost to society. That's, in essence, what a carbon tax is. And then, of course, the company, known as Freedom Industries, promptly declared bankruptcy to get out of any liability. We have a caller on the line. What's the name?
Yeah, hi.
I don't have the name. Okay, caller, you're on the line. Welcome to the AM Alternative.
Hi, thank you for your analysis about what's going on with mountaintop removal in West Virginia and mm-hmm. drinking water issues. That's an issue that's dear to my heart, and I worked on it for 30 years. One thing I wanted to make sure people didn't do is to run out and buy bottled water. Albeit there's a lot of problems with the pollution running from the mountaintops that are being blown up, like you suggested.
Again, in West Virginia, bottled water is about the only thing they can drink, but I'm not saying it's perfect. But
yeah, what I wanted to say, though, is that as problematic as the Army Corps of Engineers is, who pulls in our water out of the Potomac River for about 1 million people here in the D.C. area, and as problematic as D.C. water is with its lies about lead and other issues in our drinking water, the drinking water is regulated, treated, and costs less than a penny a gallon. And if you go to bottled water, you're giving huge profits to people who are unsustainably pulling out water from lots of little communities and destroying those communities as well, or who are just taking tap water and putting it in bottles, which create lots of problems in terms of their production, chemical pollution, and their disposal. So I think it's a complex issue, and we really need to keep supporting the education that PFW and others are doing, but we also need to be careful about understanding the political economy of drinking water, and we don't want to go down those aisles in our big grocery marts where they put huge numbers of shelves with bottled water because yeah. they're earning more profit than oil.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I want to be clear. In West Virginia, where if you turn on the tap water, that stuff may kill you, you're going to have to rely on bottled water. But that doesn't mean that I advocate bottled water here or anywhere else where you can – I mean, you're right. The drinking water – when I say the Potomac is dirty, the Potomac is dirty and dangerous. And don't stick a cup in the Potomac River and drink from it, please. But that doesn't mean that our drinking water – you're right. They filter it here. They get it from the tap. And I don't advocate bottled water for and also you can get filters, and that's what I use at home. What I use I use my drinking water, and I use filters.
Right. And there's no silver bullet. The
right.
fact is we have pollution in the parts per trillion that we can barely pick out in the labs, and it's very difficult once it's in the water to filter it. You're right that there's problems with how we live in our society with chemicals and other pollutants that make it into the water and air and that are almost impossible to understand in terms of how they interact when they get into the body. The problem is that we have to look for positive alternative solutions, and that's not an ideological quip that we can make.
Right. No, I understand. What do you advocate, by the way, in terms of...
Well, so I was... Yeah,
so... You said you did this for 30 years. What do you advocate?
Well, So a couple things. One is transparency and good information is the sunshine and oxygen of good politics. And so what we really need to do is to force the manufacturers and distributors of goods to share information. And then we need to make sure that our public and private agencies, like the drinking water system for Charleston and the surrounding area, actually collect that data. So they're supposed to go and look upstream of their drinking water intake and understand what the likely pollution sources are.
And that requires regulation and government laws.
Well, there is some regulation under something called the Safe Drinking Water Act nationally.
Right, but there's not in West Virginia.
What has the state done to see that the drinking water source protection law has been followed? And how do we give drinking water companies some enforcement upstream of their intake to work with private landowners and chemical companies and others to make sure that we pull those wastes out of there before they can pollute, not just know about them, but not even allow them to operate and make that a source. Now, that's a difficult political situation. Folks have to organize and not wait for a disaster to happen.
That's for sure.
Before you do,
we're at the top of the hour, and we're going to have just a quick little break. If you want to stay on and chat with me after that.
Just wanted to talk about the issue of lead in our drinking water and where we are 10 years after it.
I tell you what, we got to wrap this up just because we got to end this hour. So we're going to do that.
Problem.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate what you have to say. A lot of good points. This is Mark Levine, the AM Alternative. Be right back right after this.
Greetings. I'm Askia Muhammad, news director. And you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.